Back on the record. The matter of FIC 2022-0554, William Fish Jr. versus Chief Executive Officer of Connecticut Innovations et al. So we were waiting for a proposed amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, Kevin Munn, I was the hearing officer in this matter. So I'll just propose that we amend the first paragraph of the order by adding after the last sentence, in the event such search yields no records responsive to the request described in paragraphs 2J and 2K above, respondent Matthew McCooey shall provide the complainant with an affidavit detailing the nature and scope of the search and averring that no such records exist.
Chairman, I move that we amend the hearing officer's report and the first paragraph of the order per the language just recited by the county.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded regarding the amendment. Is there any discussion regarding the amendment? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call vote on the amendment only. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. The matter is amended and passed unanimously. Is there any further discussion on the decision as amended? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the amended hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion on the decision as amended? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the decision as amended. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you very much.
Will we receive a copy of the amended language?
We'll get the final decision, and it'll incorporate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Attorney Gleason. Thank you, Attorney Fish.
Thank you very much.
We report on pending appeals. And I know Attorney Harmon wants briefly.
Yes.
Couple of other items to report, right?
Yes. So, Felicia Harmon, we have a new appeal on a Bridgeport case. So, this was a case where Evan Harsich of the Innocence Project requested records for inmate Cliff Brown, and he requested all records, reports, media, investigative materials, and everything related to this Bridgeport criminal case. And it took about a year for Bridgeport to respond. This is all in the commission's decision. And they said, no responsive records have been located, but your request hasn't been denied. Finally, when we got the case to a hearing March 24th, 2021, the complainant indicated that he had gotten some disclosure of 250 pages, but they were highly redacted, and another 300 pages had been withheld. And so the commission had the Bridgeport Police Department submit the records that had been redacted or withheld in their entirety to the commission for an in-camera inspection. The hearing officer those exemptions, and most of the exemptions were found not to be applicable to the records. And so the disclosure order, the final order of the commission, was that the records should be disclosed. They appealed that decision, saying, basically that when Attorney Parsick filed his complaint with the commission, he did not specifically contest the exemptions and the withholdings that the police department made in his complaint. So very hyper-technical argument that, if you don't say the right words in your complaint to the commission, then the commission doesn't have jurisdiction to examine the records that were withheld. So it's interesting the cases that they're taking up, because I know, having talked to the hearing officer, that Attorney Parsick said, there can be no greater public interest than rectifying a wrongful conviction. So this case is now in front of the Superior Court, and we'll see what happens. But I think it's a very, you know, it's a very bad argument to say that when someone requests records, that unless they say, and I want all the records, or, you know, when they file the complaint with us, they say, and I contest anything that, I mean, we're a citizens commission. The lawyers will catch on to this hyper-technical need to request and plead this way. But, you know, the bulk of what we have here and who we serve are regular people who we've always said, you know, don't have to have this hyper-technical knowledge of the law. So I think it will be good to get this issue resolved, because I think that when someone makes a request for records, they want all the records. When they file a complaint with the commission, you know, the fact of the matter is they want to know why they didn't get all the records. And that's what the evidentiary hearing is for the respondents to prove to the hearing officer by way of evidence why certain records were redacted or withheld. I think the presumption is disclosure. I think the Supreme Court has made that clear. And I think the contested case hearing is where the respondents come to explain why they want to deviate from that presumption. So I'm glad that this case is going up. And I think it will be interesting.
Our second Bridgeport one.
In a very short
last reported time. On earlier Bridgeport appeal, where there are some parallel arguments in that appeal.
Yes,
I think,
yes.
As well, so.
And also,
is it Attorney Scalo who's arguing these, or is it another appellate?
Yes, Daniel, Attorney McGee is going to report also that she had an oral argument in a Bridgeport matter last week. But before Attorney McGee reports on her oral argument, Attorney Smith resolved an appeal, and she's going to report on that, unless the commissions have any questions for me.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Mary Kate Smith for the record. I was assigned as commission counsel in the matter of town manager, town of South Windsor versus Connecticut Freedom of Information Commission, which was an appeal to the Superior Court from a decision in docket number FIC 2021-0631, Kristen Norton versus town manager, town of South Windsor et al. The underlying case involved a FOI request for certain communications from three law firms. At the date of the hearing, the respondents had only conducted a search with respect to one of the law firms. So the hearing officer ordered the respondents to go conduct the search as to the other two law firms. The respondents conducted the search, produced additional records. With redactions, the hearing officer found that the redactions were proper, but the production was late, so violated the promptness requirement. So the respondents appealed to the Superior Court, complaining that, you know, that, you know, we weren't prompt. I mean, we were prompt because actually the records we produced were not responsive to the request. So I'd come before you to ask that I get permission to go to the to have a status conference with the court to seek a remand to the court, to the commission. The hearing officer, the court granted that remand. The hearing officer issued a new report, which the commission approved, and the case has been withdrawn. So it all worked out.
So what was the ultimate decision?
It's strange.
I'm confused on the ultimate decision now.
Well, the ultimate decision was that basically the respondents didn't violate the FOI Act because they were prompt. There were no records responsive to the request.
Okay. But the hearing officer had ordered them to produce these records nevertheless.
Well, initially, the hearing officer had ordered the respondents to make the additional search. There were no responsive records to that additional search. They produced records, they were actually beyond what the request had sought. So the respondents were upset that they were found to be not prompt when what they actually were producing were additional records, not responsive to the request, but didn't highlight that to the hearing officer at the time that the hearing officer had made that initial decision. So for the first time on an appeal, when they appealed that decision, they said, well, we were prompt because there were no responsive records to the additional search. So that's why it was remanded back to the hearing officer. The hearing officer issued a new report, and then it was approved by the commission, I believe, April 12th of this year.
Thank you.
And then after that final decision went out, the appeal was withdrawn.
Thank you.
It makes my head hurt.
It's a little strange. They produced records. We found that those records were not provided promptly. And then they appealed it.
Unprompted.
And then said, oh, these records that we gave you were not responsive to the request at all. So when we took a closer look at them, it was verified that they weren't. And then we took the decision back and dismissed it. But it would have been helpful to deal with that issue before all of this. So
yeah, when they produced those records, they didn't alert it to the hearing officer that these were not actually responsive. So in any event, the appeal has been withdrawn.
Thank you.
And then now we'll hear about the appellate court argument involving Bridgeport.
Yes.
And the commission.
It's going to sound very familiar. Danielle McGee, I was appellate counsel in an appeal taken by Bridgeport, stemming from a request that an individual by the name of Marlando Daly made back in 2019. Mr. Daly was essentially seeking all records pertaining to the Bridgeport Police Department's investigation of a murder that he was convicted of. At the time that the matter was before the commission, Bridgeport raised a jurisdictional argument, essentially claiming that they did not receive Mr. Daly's request until one day before he filed his appeal with the commission. There was an issue with respect to whether there was evidence to establish that point. Bridgeport never put forth evidence to allow the hearing officer to make a finding as to when they actually received the request. There certainly was no dispute that they had received it, but they sort of made this argument that, well, we only had it for one day, so how could there possibly have been a denial? The hearing officer addressed the issue of jurisdiction, concluding that based on the deemed denial provision in section 1-206 subsection A, that Bridgeport's failure to comply with the request within 4 business days of the date of the request, the commission, or that Daly was able to appeal from a denial after the 4th business day and the commission had jurisdiction. So we addressed the jurisdictional issue, we found jurisdiction, and we moved on to address some of the other arguments that Bridgeport had raised with respect to particular claims of exemptions. We found there was a violation, ordered disclosure of a number of records. We also ordered the department to conduct an additional search because they hadn't provided all responsive records or they hadn't done an adequate search. Bridgeport took an appeal and they argued that we erred with respect to our determination on jurisdiction, again, making the argument that we only had one day with this request before an appeal was filed. In addition, they argued that, similar to what Attorney Harmon reported, that because Mr. Daly did not explicitly allege in his complaint to the commission that he disputed any claim of redaction, that the commission should have never addressed the redactions in the first place, that was outside the scope of the complaint, that they were not noticed, and that the commission erred with respect to its determination that they failed to prove that certain information in the records was exempt pursuant to 1-210B3A, the exemption for the identity of confidential informants or witnesses. So at the Superior Court level, the trial court agreed with the Bridgeport PD in terms of the jurisdictional analysis and really came up with some troubling language in terms of how the commission is supposed to assess whether a public agency has denied a request. The court went on to also decide issues based on evidence that wasn't in the record. So just by way of example, one of the statements in Mr. Daly's request to Bridgeport was that they respond to him in 14 days or ask for more time. And the court said, well, that means that Mr. Daly had no right to take an appeal to the commission for at least 14 days, 14 business days or from the date of his request or 14 business days from the date that Bridgeport received his request. There was a little back and forth there. It wasn't clear. The court really didn't make a determination about how you calculated the days, but certainly drew this conclusion about the 14 days, not based on anything in the record, to say that the commission didn't have jurisdiction because he appealed too soon. And although the court decided the case against the commission on jurisdictional grounds, the court went on to add some additional language about the way in which the commission improperly went on to adjudicate exemptions that were never before the commission, that the hearing officer went beyond the scope of the complaint, a lot of troubling language that I recall Attorney Murphy sort of going on at length to the commission about why we wanted to take an appeal. And so the commission recommended that we appeal the matter to the appellate court. So fast forward to last Thursday, I appeared before Judge Maul, Judge Suarez, and Chief Judge Bright. And Judge Bright allowed me very graciously to give my introduction and then immediately went into questioning me about the jurisdictional issue, asked me a lot of hypotheticals about how the commission interprets the deemed denied provision, how we calculate the number of days, how we would look at two requests that are perhaps dated the same, but one is mailed and one is hand-delivered. And also asked me about Bridgeport's argument on the scope of the complaint. And similar to what Attorney Harmon indicated, I sort of started off with, you know, the presumptions disclosure that's set forth under the Act and Supreme Court precedent, applying that precedent to the facts of the case. Daly clearly asked for all responsive records. And so when the public agency deviates from that presumption, they have the burden of proving those exemptions. And what I found was interesting was when Attorney Scalo went up to make her argument, Judge Bright really pressed her on, one, how is Bridgeport prejudiced at all by this alleged lack of notice in terms of the denial? And also, how is Bridgeport prejudiced by the claim of exemption? I mean, shouldn't you assume that when a requester asks for all records, if you withhold anything, they're going to object? You should be prepared, essentially, to proceed with defending your position as to all exemptions claimed. If he asks for all records, the obligation is to turn over all records. So I found that particularly interesting and hopeful that the court will agree with us and how we've interpreted that issue as well. It's come before us many times. Judge Maul and Judge Suarez didn't ask me any questions. They did ask Attorney Scalo a couple of questions about this 14-day issue and whether it came up before the commission. And Bridgeport was clear, as was I, that it never came up at the commission level. So it really wasn't appropriate for the court to take up that issue and decide it without evidence in the record or without it having been raised. So that's about it where we landed. Hopefully we'll have a decision with some good language in our favor.
That's what we're hoping.
Yeah.
Danielle, for good work on that and everyone who helped.
Yeah. And thanks to my moot team, Felicia, Kevin, and Kate, and everyone else who listened to me go on and on and on about, what if they ask me this? What if they ask me that? What do you think about this? So it went well.
Living with it
well
for
prepared.
A long time.
Yep. Yes. The marshal said, great job. You folks really know this case. I'm like, well, we've been living it for quite some time. So. Yeah. Any questions?
Thank you. So under Executive Director's Report, I'll just report, I guess it goes a little bit with legislative, just again with the budget. We're looking at potentially two new positions, and I've begun discussions about where we will put those new people in this building. You all know we're quite cramped, I would say, in our current offices. Yes. So far, I'm not getting wonderful feedback in terms of where to put these people, and we will probably have to foot the bill for whatever alterations we do for those people. So it's a little bit frustrating that the legislature would give us positions and kind of having a problem figuring out where to house them. So I'm working on that. It may ultimately be that we have to modify our library / meeting room / hearing room. I'm still hoping that we don't have to do that, but that's possibly where we will head. And we can talk after the meeting just about that special meeting that I've been in touch with all of you about. I just need to get maybe from one more person, I think it's our chairman, just to hear about his availability. But as of this moment, it looks like it will be on June 7th, and we will have to get that decision out quite quickly after that. So just before we leave today, I'd like to wrap that up with you, figure out the date for that. Yes, for the commission meeting.
Possible times, which time, June 7th?
Right, it will probably be the afternoon one. I know you
That's better for me.
Oh, it is better for you on the 7th?
7th is Wednesday, right?
7th is the Wednesday. Okay, good.
I mean, just.
So I think it may work.
Shouldn't turn on me, I'm just trying to.
Majority, if not all of you. And we're just anticipating one decision, which is in its final stages of preparation right now. But give yourself a little time to read it.
Are there in camera that we also have to look at or not in this case?
There are in camera involved, if you would, you know, we'll make those available if you'd like to look at them, either, you know, in advance of the meeting, during the meeting, we can always take a break. So just let us know on that front.
Do you want us to pick a date right now?
For?
That hearing?
Are you available June 7th? I think the time was 2:30, right? Jen, do I have that right? No?
I have hearings, yeah.
Alternate time would have been 9:30 in the morning or something. I don't, I'm just from my recollection.
Right, any, or it can be later than 2:30, Mr. Chairman?
I go from, yeah, no, my hearings go from 1:30 to say 4:30.
Okay.
So it would have to be the morning for me, I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
Is there another day that works for everybody?
Well, the other day we were looking at is Monday, but I think there are a few people that can't make Monday.
Can we do it in the morning on the 7th? You can't do that?
No, it's, don't make it, I can always do it by telephone, it's just hard to get here at 9 in the morning.
Right.
Trying to wake up.
But yes, don't make it turn on me, just make sure we have a quorum.
Morning.
You name it.
Okay. All right, we'll circle back and make it definite. We had talked about 9:30, but let me see if there may be a little flexibility in that. I know it might be a little late for people.
10 o'clock?
I'm in the afternoon.
You're still sleeping?
No, just court.
Okay. All right, well, I put our retiree poor Mary in charge of figuring out the. Okay, we'll pin it down very soon and let you know, but I think we have a sense of everyone's availability. Okay, so under legislative report, I'll just ask Paula, we could go on for quite a while on this topic, Paula, but just maybe you hit a few high points where we are.
Annie Murphy's correct, we could go on. I'll just give you some highlights. So the House and Senate are meeting now, or going into session on a more regular basis. Have a lot of bills to take up. Last week, Wednesday and Thursday, the Senate voted out three of the bills that we are monitoring. Not great bills for FOI. One of them is the proposal that wants to exempt from disclosure whistleblower complaints in their entirety. It was voted out with an amendment. Initially, the bill proposed to add complaint or exempt complaints separately from disclosure and made it out of the Senate essentially as like redefining records of investigation, which are currently exempt from disclosure. It wanted to make clear that a complaint is essentially part like a record investigation. So that made it out of the Senate. It is now moving on to the House. So hopefully we can hopefully it won't be called for a vote, but we're working on it. Also, the university records bill, that was the proposal that I've mentioned before that is extremely broad and essentially would exempt all records relating to public universities from disclosure, except for financial records. So essentially, it means public universities are exempt from disclosure if that passes, or you could argue that that's what it is. It did make it out of the Senate with an amendment, but it doesn't really change how broad the proposal is. So that too is moving on to the House. The other bill that it was interesting. There was quite a passionate debate last week on this bill. It deals with the residential addresses. So the initial proposal would have added a new category of employee to the list that currently exists, the the list of 13. And then there was a separate section dealing with mass requests. So when requests were made for the personnel medical similar file of 50 or more employees, the bill was amended at the Senate to take out that second section dealing with mass requests. But it and ended up, and this is part of, and due to some discussions that we had with the union and some legislators, it added a 14th category. So we took out the language dealing with the mass requests, but it added a 14th category that essentially said addresses of all public employees are exempt from disclosure, except for if it's a condition or a term of employment. That got quite the reaction. Many legislators, on both sides of the aisle, so both Republicans and Democrats, were very much upset about it. They objected. So the debate went on for a while, which is surprising. It was surprising to us in past years. The proposals dealing with 1-217 really haven't had such passionate debate, but it happened this year. So that made it out of the Senate, and that too is now on its way to the House. I don't know if you want to add anything further on those for now.
Those are the big three that we're watching right now. They're all, as Paula said, before the House, and we've had some good meetings with legislators on all three of those proposals. So we'll see how it plays out.
And then the only other ones I was going to point out, the FOI, the commission's proposals itself, they're just sitting on the calendar. We still haven't heard anything either way. So we haven't heard objections. But it is sitting.
What's our proposal?
The proposals were the six proposals that the commission put forward dealing with the functional equivalent, dealing with the definition of handheld scanners. Most of it was clarified, except for the handheld scanner. Most of it was more like cleanup and clarification. That was the one we wanted. We had the training requirement that requires us to train on vaping and smoking in public buildings, and we're trying to get that out of our statute because it doesn't make any sense. We've researched, we don't know how it made it into the statute, but that was one of the set of proposals that we put in for 2 years in a row. The other two that I just want to quickly report on, the bill dealing with the redactions, body cams, and being able to charge fees for the redaction, that one, it's been kind of all over the place. It made it out of committee, and then it was referred to appropriations, made it out of appropriations, then it was referred to judiciary, now it's made it out of judiciary, and it's back in the Senate. I'm not sure if it's going to move any further than that. It's interesting that it's sort of making it's quite the path that it's making. And then the last one, the bill, it wasn't the commission's proposal, but it was something a legislator introduced it as a result of all the Bridgeport cases that we've had, the one dealing to like increasing the civil penalty from 1,000 to 10,000, and also giving the commission a different remedy to go to court to enforce, to seek some more additional relief. That one was referred to the Judiciary Committee and it voted out, but there was some discussion in there, like there was some concern about making it as high as $10,000. So it wasn't necessarily an objection to the whole bill, but just of how much what the maximum penalty would be. So that one, like I said, made it out. It's back on the calendar, the Senate calendar. So I think those are
If I could just make one 10-second observation.
Sure.
One thing I'm observing and just that is a running through some of what's going through the legislature about the FOIC, but it's a national issue. It's people who traditionally are very strong supporters of transparency, for example, the American educational community, professors, researchers. There's so many people now that feel that the atmosphere in our country is threatening them and their children and families. And there is a overhang of that fear that is affecting transparency decisions. And it's not an illegitimate, it's a real fear, but has split some of the communities that would traditionally be very strong supporters. I believe the education bill is to some degree turning on that. That is that researchers and people who are doing research in various areas where they think might expose their families and others to criticisms, to a community, negative community reaction, are starting to weigh protecting their own families and within their own community. And that is affecting their traditional strong feelings for transparency. And my fear is that because there is a reality to that fear, that issue, nationally even more than in Connecticut, will start overhanging some of the legislative decisions on transparency issues. That it's the same people who traditionally, many of the same people, academic unions and academic, are now torn a little bit as to, for good, for legitimate personal worries about themselves and their families. And it's a very hard place to find the right point. So it does not hurt transparency too much without leaving these people who believe they have legitimate fears. And in the process, a lot of things will go harder to find and harder because everything will get swept under some of these bills that will block transparency to some degree for some period of time. Address issue, I think, is an example, although most of the addresses are the real estate records. But people feel, oh my God, I don't want my address so easily findable now because I do public work. I'm on a board. So it's a sad moment, I think, when those two both admirable goals start running into each other. That's just my little personal observation, but it goes to our duty here is to contribute to your thinking and your working. I've been following your work and you're trying to find the balance in the legislature, and I commend you for all the work. And others are doing, trying to find the right balance there, but hitting groups that would traditionally be great supporters of us, pulling back a little bit. I don't know if you experienced that a little bit as you're listening to these debates.
Yes, I think there's definitely an element of that, and we're trying to be sensitive to it, as you said, to find a balance, but we've been having a hard time in some instances.
No, it's a very difficult position to be in right now. I mean, it's the Democrat, who's a Democrat, who's a Republican, is starting to flip around on these issues right now. Anyway, sorry. Not sorry. I mean, I hope that a little thought might resonate with somebody for some reason, for something in the long run. It bothers me when I... Not bother, it makes me sad. That's where our zeitgeist in Connecticut has come to also, not just in other states. But public officials are afraid. Target is afraid. Businesses are afraid. There's this fear going on about speaking your mind.
Do you use other jurisdictions? Did you go to other jurisdictions for insight on these amendments or things that the legislature is looking at? So in other words, do you look at other states to see what their FOI law is and compare it to ours? And ours is pretty broad, isn't it?
Yes, so if the
legislature is considering limiting our law, do you compare what other legislatures are doing in other jurisdictions to what?
We do.
You do?
We have.
Is there any state that's more broad, that has a broader law than we do?
You know, with respect to the, you know, I can speak to the university records one. We did look at other states. Some states completely exempt public institutions of higher learning from disclosure. Others have exemptions similar to what we have already that we believe address some of the concerns that have been expressed. So we have, there's only, I think, only a handful of states that exempt them completely.
Do you use those in your arguments to the legislature?
They actually use them
against
us by saying, well, it's happening in other states. But again, I just, the proposal itself, it's more than just research and teaching in classrooms. It moves beyond that. So, but we do, to answer your question, we do look at other states.
See what they're doing.
Especially if it's a proposal that we haven't seen, hasn't come up before, we try to, you know, educate ourselves to see what other states are doing.
Are we more open than most states?
We still are, yes. In most respects, yes.
That's what I thought.
But we particularly, like with the body cam, with the fees, we looked, I think it was Kate who got us a whole listing of what she could find in every state so far about fees. And we took that quickly and took every sort of positive FOI piece. We did an amalgamation of all the parts that we thought could help ease the fee requirements, you know, building in a cap, building in some free time before you can charge, making sure that the charges are just for redactions, not for searching, making sure that once a record is made available, the agency can't charge a second time for that record. So we built a bunch of things into it, and it was really helpful to look at what some of the other states had done and try to, because I think this wave about fees is coming on the body cameras, and it's just good to be part of the discussion, try to find the right balance, and build some good components into it. So,
thank you.
But usually people are pointing to other states to say, well, look, in New Jersey, they're protecting their university professors. Why can't Connecticut protect theirs? You know, so we're usually kind of beating that back and just saying, you know, we're very proud to have one of the most robust laws in the country, and we're very careful about cutting back on that. So they're usually kind of pointed out as a reason why Connecticut should narrow disclosure as opposed to broaden disclosure.
Interesting. Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry. Thanks, Paula. Two more weeks for the legislative session.
Two more weeks. Hang in there, Paula.
Two more weeks from today.
And that's all I have.
Yeah.
And I'll take a roll call of those in favor of adjourning. Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeshi.
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby.
Yes.
Mr. Hankin.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, all in favor, yes. Thank you. Thank you all. Great job.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Mr. Streeter always gets to make that motion that always passes unanimously.
Yes.